it's a process. It's a way to, that can plug into the normal design process in an architecture firm.
This is The Art of Construction with your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keith. Devin has built a multi-7-figure business in the construction industry, selling windows, doors, and hardware over the past 13 years. Devin's passion for helping those around him led him to create the Art of Construction informational platform, a part of which is a fireside chat podcast with industry professionals all focused on how they apply art in their business and construction projects. Grown to an audience of over 100,000, Devin shares his strategies for what he has accomplished and creates insightful conversations with industry leaders. This is The Art of Construction, featuring your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keith.
All right, Kevin, we're going to peel back all the layers of biomimicry today.
What?
What's that?
I don't know. I can't even say it. Mimicry. Oh, mimicking something. Okay.
Let's find out. I guess we'll find out, huh?
That's it.
Well, we're going to dive in and have a fireside chat with Cynthia Fishman, who is getting her master's degree in biomimicry that we want to learn all about. She is doing a lot of work day to day as she's building up her business within the business that we're always talking about, the Art of Construction, and why we wanted to have her into Studio AOC.
Here we go.
What's your favorite beverage?
Favorite beverage of the moment would probably be a Manhattan. Just really nice. Into bourbon and something with that cherry. It's really good.
A nice meal, that's what I go to as well. It's Friday night. Maybe one of those tonight.
Right. Or, you know, an afternoon or something.
There
like
you
that.
Go. Yeah, yeah.
Better.
Go have a Manhattan after this fireside
chat.
Since
you're on that subject, we're having a whiskey tasting coming up, aren't we? Isn't that on the schedule?
That's right. Yeah, like that? Yeah. Yeah, Mountain View and Honduras with clients. We're out in the parking lot. We're having a wood-fired pizza truck and whiskey tasting.
So. Yeah, so stay tuned.
There you go.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Probably my favorite place that I've traveled is India. I was just there in March of this year and went just, I'd always wanted to go, even though I had never really expressed that to anyone. So it was kind of a big surprise that I wanted to do this. Went for 2 weeks and got to travel around southern India and go to tea plantations and spice plantations and then look at architecture from the 6th century. And it was just kind of one of those life-changing experiences.
Cool. Well, tell us one experience from that.
So I was in southern India and in Karnataka, there's the Badami cave temples, which were built in the 6th century. And it's just this beautiful kind of tie-dyed striation of rock and just how they built it then, I have no idea. But these really intricate columns and all these Hindu gods and there's 4 different temples and it's just, I don't know, it's just really beautiful just being in that space.
Awesome. Tell us your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena.
I'm supposed to have those? No, I'm just kidding.
I can tell from our conversations leading up to this is maybe your hobbies or interests are all about construction.
Right.
And when you wear a lot of hats, and we're going to talk about that today. But, you know, other things make us ticks besides buildings, right?
I do try and be well-rounded. So probably my biggest hobby, if it's called a hobby, is music. I'm just constantly playing. If there's soundtrack going on in my head all the time, I'm listening to music in my car, at work, at home, everything. When I read books, when I travel, it's just music. And Beatles are my all-time favorite band. Saying I'm obsessed doesn't really cover it.
You know, there's a new issue. Speaking of the Beatles, there's a new issue of Sgt. Pepper that just came out yesterday or today.
I know. It sounds amazing. Yes. Very excited about it.
Good stuff.
Very cool.
Well, we got to know a little bit about Cynthia Fishman, who we're so excited to have here in person at Studio AOC. She has done a ton in the construction industry. And as I was reading through her bio, as she's currently an architect for a firm that we'll talk about, she's a project manager there. But she's doing so much more for the industry that we want to peel back those layers. And I want to start off this conversation by when I was going through her bio, it says she is currently pursuing a Master of Science in Biomimicry, a degree at Arizona State University. And me as the leader of the tribe of the AOC, I don't know what that is. So I said, come on in and tell me about that, and we'll go from there. So who is Cynthia Fishman, and then get into telling us about biomimicry.
Okay, well, Cynthia Fishman is an architect. I'm currently working at KTGY Architecture and Planning in their Denver office. And in addition to working, I don't really like free time, so I decided to go back to school and do that concurrently. So I'm working on my master's through ASU, and it's all done online, which is great. So I get to stay in Denver because I do love it here. And biomimicry is kind of one of the newest ancient technologies out there. It's learning from nature, that nature has 3.8 billion years of research and development, and looking to learn from nature as opposed to about nature and how nature solves design problems. So it can be in the architecture field, engineering, medicine, transportation, even social innovation. It's just, if there we have a design challenge, nature's probably already solved it and does it working within the constraints of this planet. And it just, the term biomimicry and just the concept of it I discovered while I was an undergrad, and it just completely fit with everything that I'm interested in trying to make the world a better place and being part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. So when ASU started this program in 2015, I was one of the first to sign up, was the first matriculated class, I guess, in 2015. And ASU is the first accredited program in the world. The Biomimicry Institute has been doing this for a while, and they do these amazing workshops and consulting, and they work with different architecture firms and Target and Nike, and biomimicry can be applied to anywhere. So I'm just really excited to be part of this new field. Yes.
So it's a new thing, but it's really an old, it's going back to the beginning and kind of learning from the past of history is kind of what I'm gathering from your...
Yeah, so it's just, looking to see how nature solves something. So, good example is looking at how whales move through the ocean, and that there are these, 40 to 50 long, foot species, 80,000 pounds, but they can gracefully move through the water without creating a lot of turbulence. So looking at that, we can see that their fins have tubercles on them. So it's those bumpy edges on the fins, and that causes them to be able to glide through the water. And using that kind of design, applying it to different fans or fins. So there's a new company called Whale Power, and they produce these fans that, have an 8% improvement in lift and a 32% reduction in drag, just by slightly changing the design of something we're already doing. So using those for wind turbines or just a ceiling fan, it just becomes a lot more efficient.
What a great parallel.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm sitting back watching, and I can see your passion. I love it because I'm a passionate guy about the industry, and you find something that just really drives you, and I can tell that's pushing you. But you also got to pay the bills along the way. And Kevin came to the AOC tribe, formerly a builder, and as a builder, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, you worked with KTGY, which is her firm day-to-day. So I can tell that your firm you're working for is allowing people to grow and build and this whole tribe that we're creating with the Art of Construction. So tell me, I personally don't know about the firm KTGY. So from Kevin formerly as a contractor working with them to now being the host on the microphone with someone that works for them, tell me something. Let's paint the picture of who they are.
No, absolutely. So at the risk of defining my age a little bit, this is going back into the 1990s when I first started working with one of the principals of KTGY based in Irvine, California, around the Newport Beach area. And I was a builder in Southern Nevada and building new production homes and some custom homes. And, we were really looking for architecture that was kind of pushing the envelope in terms of new innovations and that kind of thing. And again, this is a long time ago, so it's a little different than now in terms of things that we see out there. But we were still looking for something better than what we were seeing locally. And that's why we ended up hiring KTGY. And it's kind of interesting because as time goes on, I saw their growth, and John Tully, who was one of the principals, like I mentioned, he and I interacted on a lot of our business personally. I've been to their office in Irvine and saw them when they were, a couple of dozen people, and now they have more than a couple dozen offices. So
that is correct.
Exciting to see.
So I want to hear one story, Kevin, is what comes to mind when you said you chose them back in the early 90s to be your architect firm because they were innovative. And if you go back to the recent show with Gunther Kuhn, one of our trusted advisors at Mountain View and Door, that's a word that we use a lot in our culture and what we create on the AOC tribe. Tell me a story in the early 90s of why you chose them and what comes to mind when you say they were innovative. Give something specific that now we're talking about this in 2017, so that'd be quite a few years later.
Well, it really has to do with the basics of home design. I mean, it's something that, unfortunately, what we witnessed a lot of in Southern Nevada at the time is that people were just hitting the copy, repeat button, copy, repeat. So the floor plans, the lifestyle, a lot of what we take for granted now, bringing the outdoors in, the bigger great room spaces. I mean, they're sort of basic things as we look at our criteria these days. But back then, the kinds of things that we were still seeing from the local architecture firms and most of the builders were building these kinds of things that were really boring and not really functional. And everything in California was flying off the shelves at the time. And so that's what we were really looking for. And that's really, so it wasn't a specific item like they had some secret sauce. It's just they knew how to put it all together in a way that really functioned, really worked, and ultimately is what people really wanted. And a lot of our customer base were obviously moving from Southern California. They were taking that huge equity out of California, moving to Southern Nevada with no sales tax, no income tax, all those kind of things. But they wanted that lifestyle. Nobody had it to offer. So we were one of the first that kind of went that direction of bringing in the California architecture firm. So
awesome. So Cynthia, coming out of school from Rice University in Houston, right?
Correct.
Is where you got your Bachelor of Architecture. What inspired you now 2 years later? What made you go from that college to the KTGY firm?
Well, there were a lot of other steps in between that. I would like to think that I just graduated 2 years ago, but sadly not. So I was originally from the Northeast, and then I went to school in Texas and then lived in Arizona for a while and New Mexico and then ended up in Colorado. And it's taken me a while to kind of find a good fit in terms of a firm. But I love working at KTGY, and just, you know, the way that they do push the envelope, and we are innovative and we try and be early adapters. And just, we have a research and development section that we're looking at how to approach multifamily housing in a different way of these community rooms and not just having the stereotypical gym or game room or whatever, but what else are people looking for? And then what about the 55 plus market and how to advertise to millennials and that they actually have a lot of overlapping ideals that they want in housing. So KTGY is just a fabulous place to be working. We're almost 400 people now. We have 6 offices. We've really grown in the past 25 years. And I was just lucky enough to know someone who worked there who asked me if I was interested in an interview. And it just really worked out well.
Cool. Well, as the AOC is growing rapidly, it's fun to be having guests on the show of our ideal customers, as we say, which is contractors, architects, and project designers. It's good to be talking and rubbing elbows with KTGY. So thanks for that information about that. So next I want to talk a little bit about locally what you're doing as you've been evolving and working on a bunch of different things as you're going to school with biomimicry. Tell me about what you're doing that you've started Denver Does Design.
As I said before, I don't really like free time. So in addition to going to work and going to school, I also really like volunteering and have been a really active member of AIA Colorado, so the American Institute of Architects. And through them, just kind of with all the different groups that I was with, the emerging professionals, different task force committees, I realized that architects really love talking to other architects. And we're very good about it. I mean, who doesn't love to discuss a control joint? I mean, that's just really fun. So I kind of thought that we really needed some kind of new event where we're talking to engineers and contractors and landscape architects and marketing professionals. And I just didn't see an event like that specifically for emerging professionals to kind of start networking and having these connections so that the future leaders have these connections for later on. So again, with not wanting any free time, started this idea of Meet the Dark Side, which is this annual event that is on May 4th. So May the 4th be with you. And we just play off the whole Star Wars thing. And the idea is that the other group is the dark side. So architects feel the engineers are the dark side and contractors feel that the architects are the dark side. And it just really lent itself towards Star Wars. And we started this event 5 years ago and had about 75 people show up. The one that we had just this past year had 428 people, I believe.
You put on.
Yeah. Nice. So me and a very big committee. Yes, I could definitely not have done this by myself.
Right, but you started this whole thing.
Yes.
Congratulations.
So yeah, it's kind of my baby. But it's such a fun event. And now we have over 16 different professional organizations with the whole alphabet soup that, you know, I at one point knew what all the acronyms meant. But now we have all these groups as part of the committee and everyone has buy-in. And it's just a place to network with, you know, graphic designers. And I'm trying to think of all the listing real estate professionals and women in design and USGBC, and it's just a whole list of things. So you go there and you get to meet people that maybe you had met before at a different event, or maybe you've never met, or maybe you wanted to meet and didn't have an opportunity to do so.
So for all of those out there that might be concerned that you actually might have some free time on your calendar, you're looking at potentially adding this to adding more events during the year for this group, or are you still just going to keep it on an annual one-time basis?
Right. Well, so since last year's event was so successful, the group, the 16 different organizations decided we did want to grow it. So we took the Meet the Dark Side event and then formed this other, I don't remember what our exact categorization is. It's some kind of nonprofit lodge association. I don't really know what the government is calling us, but we are an actual like company now. It's called Denver Does Design. And nice. We have a website, denverdoesdesign.com, and in it has our newsletter, and all the different organizations can advertise their events for free. So it's all this cross-pollinization. So even though you're not necessarily on the Industrial Designers listserv, you can find out what events are going on with them because we come up with this quarterly newsletter. So that's kind of our idea, because we were thinking about hosting some other events, but there are already so many great things happening in Denver, and we would just be recreating the wheel. So why don't we just be this conduit of information?
Nice. Congrats.
Yeah, that's
well,
cool.
I have to tell a story to kind of go back to the beginning, because we listen to all this stuff, and I can relate. Kevin says, I may do a few too many things sometimes, you know. So you try all these different things. And I go back to the beginning, and you got to give credit where credit is due. We started this podcast. I was a guest on a podcast show. A friend of mine, his name is Nick May. He owns a local paint company here in Denver, Colorado. And he started The Chaise Lounge, which is a podcast specifically for the design community. So The Chaise Lounge is now blown up. And I started by being a guest on his show. I was like, Nick, this is so cool. Would you help me do one? So he helped me start the Art of Construction. That was an advertisement for my little window and door company. But for whatever reason, it really took off, and now it's number one on iTunes for contractors and architects. But there was a long time in between. I had a lot of people asking me, Devin, why are you doing this? What is a podcast? Probably like me, a lot of people asked you different things. Why biomimicry? Why don't you just go work at the architect firm, because there's a lot of different personalities and ideas. But as I'm doing this, I meet people along the way. Like, we would have never went to the National AIA conference if it wasn't for meeting people through the podcast. And one of those people I met through doing an interview was Love Shack Architecture. So Lindsay Love was on the show, and we've met so many cool people from that one connection because they relate to Lindsay Love. So they listen to the show. They listen to it. That's why Cynthia's here today, is because Lindsay said, you got to meet Kevin and Devin. You're in Denver. Do the Art of Construction, so on and so forth. I didn't know what biomimicry was. I didn't know that this Denver in Design, and I should know what it is because I own a window and door company in time. I should be involved in that, and my trust advisor should be there. But you know what you know, and with email and technology and the way the world goes today, you get lost in the shuffle. So my challenge and call to action to you is take some time to smell the roses and have fun and have a fireside chat. So now we come in here, meeting each other, learning all that stuff. So for what it's worth, for the people and the naysayers, that's why I do the Art of Construction. It's for you to grow your business. And if I am giving, giving, giving for you to grow your business, guess what? Denver Does Design, you started it to grow the community, and now it's this massive thing. You didn't start it for you, Cynthia Fishman. What would you say with that comment about how the Art of Construction has started in a little podcast for Mountain View, a little window and door company that's now this national platform working with a lot of different awesome people?
I think that's the way to do it. I mean, if you're not feeling passionate about something, if you aren't the one championing it, you can't really move it forward. And when you feel passionate about it, you're willing to put in the extra hours and that thing called sleep that I guess some people do and give that up. And, you know, when you really believe in something and you know that it could benefit so many other people and not just for yourself, I think that whole altruistic endeavor can, you know, helps make something bigger than it already is.
So the next thing I want both of you to comment on, you made the comment of architects like to talk with architects. I loved your parallel of the dark side of, you know, our day-to-day, we're a window and door supplier, so we're always trying to get architects come into the showroom with your contractors and clients, and let's spend 1 hour and collaborate and get it all right, and then they send an email saying, I can't come there. And then we get mad at architects, and they're saying, well, I don't have time to go talk about windows and doors. I got to build a whole project here. So I would love for you two to both, you know, Kevin in your day-to-day is the managing advisor that has to try to get all of our trusted advisors to go to the dark side and go to these events. And you're in there working at an architect firm trying to take biomimicry and all these new things to be innovative. Let's talk some real world, peel back the onion.
Well, for us, I mean, there's no question that everybody's busy, right? I mean, we all are. And there's times where we all feel pressed. It's like, I can't fit another, you know, even though there already is no free time on the list, there's I can't fit another item in there with what's going on. So we all share that common denominator, but I would challenge everybody to think about what the end result is. And we have to do this for ourselves too. So it's, you know, we call ourselves out when we're in the same spot, and that is the projects on our end. And again, we're a window and door company in the high-end custom arena. And when we get the best results, we get the best results at, you know, beginning, during, and at the end of a project, when we can get that mutual cooperation buy-in from the builder, the architect, and the homeowner. Those are the three parts. And there's some other parts in there, sometimes designers, et cetera. But I mean, it's the team of people on the home purchasers end. When we can get that involvement, particularly in the design phase with the architect and or the builder coming in here and really talking about those exciting things like you described, control joints for us, it's, you know, DP rating and structure and molds and all kinds of things. You have this awesome design and we have to talk about where the rubber meets the road. How is the manufacturer or several manufacturers in some cases going to put together your window package the way you've designed it when you can't even make glass the size that you've drawn on the sheet of paper or whatever the case may be? We got to work through all those things. When we're able to do that, when we're able to get that buy-in and that time, everybody wins.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. For me, with Denver Does Design and Meet the Dark Side, it's all about forming relationships. Because if it's just someone that, you know, you've been communicating via phone or via email and you haven't met them in person, you don't know what kind of beverages they like or if they listen to music or if they traveled anywhere. It's creating this kind of personal connection that then you kind of have this buy-in that you feel like you're part of a team. And when they have a question about the size of the glass, you're willing to work with them because not that they're necessarily your friend, but they're your professional friend. And you want to help them out and they want to help you. And it's not just this business relationship where it's very cold and sterile.
Well, and I think that's an important thing, too, there. We talk a lot about the importance of relationships, but I think right now, as we're evolving even more and more quickly in the technical realm, we also need to remember that it's human interaction that's critical. And even one of those key points of knowing something about the person that you didn't otherwise know helps you open up that door so that you can get a lot more done when you have some common ground.
And so you said we talk a lot about it, but I want to give you, Tribe, something to a call to action. And that call to action is that you got to have really good people, surround yourself around people that you know, like, and trust. But before that, you have to have really good systems. And to paint the picture on what I mean by systems is I was so proud today when I left my office to make my walk to go meet Cynthia and come into Studio AOC. Let me give you a walk on what that was like. So January 1st, 2012, I formulated Mountain View Window and Door. It was me. That was it. I bought a business from another guy, worked for him for a few years, and you can go back to the beginning and hear my story if you're intrigued. But I started by myself, and I bought into The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And that book is so powerful if you're an information entrepreneur and want to grow a business. And I took that to heart. And today, coming into the podcast, this is what I did on my walk. Is I had really good systems this morning. I got everything done that I needed to get done. And then I left my Cynthia showed in, walked in the front door. And when she walked in the front door, she was greeted by our director of first impressions, Becky Hogstead, who had a marker board with her name on there. So I'll let her talk when I get done with my story. But I bet that made a good first impression. And then you could look up on the computer screen and you could see a big TV with a digital monitor that tells you what everybody's doing and what's happening today. And I see Adam Sinclair, one of our trust advisors, with the screen with contractors, architects, the homeowners, all in the showroom collaborating on it. And then I come and I don't expect what you don't inspect. I just looked on the TV. James, my IT guy, had the podcast all ready to go. I had my show notes ready. What I'm saying is, all those things, when I started the podcast, I did it all myself to start, but then I developed really good systems. Going back to KTGY, back in the 90s when you started with them, you were working with the principals. You probably would not work with the principals today if that was case. You'd work with Cynthia Fishman or somebody that's better at doing that job than John Tully, who you talked about.
Right.
So that's what I think is really fun for me on The Art of Construction. It's not all just theories here, folks. We're talking real-world stories. So I set up really good systems and get out of the way and have a lot of fun with really good people. And I know I will be a connection with Cynthia, so when I go into the Denver Does Design event next year, because now that I'm aware about it, we now have a connection that's different than a lot of people that were enter that room because of that. And we're going to be advocates of each other, of the AOC tribe. And that's truly what we're trying to build here for the Art of Construction. So tell me your experience based on, are we doing some things right, seeing what you're doing, starting new things, and coming in here today?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was actually going to ask you if it would be okay if I took a photograph of that whiteboard.
Absolutely.
Because that was just, it was so great, like coming in and seeing this whole welcome sign with my name. And I was concerned, you know, I was running a little bit late because traffic was crazy and I was going to run in and not know where to go. And the fact that I was greeted and, you know, you were expecting me, and then I got the tour of the showroom, and it's just like I immediately felt comfortable. So, you know, it already set the foundation of, yes, this is definitely going to be a good relationship. And when you come to meet the Dark Side next year, we'll definitely recognize each other, shake each other's hands, and I can introduce you to some people. And you'll probably know half the people in the room anyway.
Awesome.
And that's such a good point that she just brought up. I'm going to go into meet the Dark Side, quite frankly, through the back door instead of the front door, meaning I actually know people who to make connections with. It's really hard to just kind of show up and go through the motions. I always push my tribe is to, like, if you're going to be involved in an organization, be on the committee. Like you say, you and I built committees. Mm-hmm. Well, then you're going to have a lot more rewards, but you're going to have a lot more interaction from that. So I just think it's intriguing to talk through that. And what would you add to that, Kevin?
Well, no, I think it's really important because it goes back to time value and education, all those kinds of things. It's all important, and you've got to focus on that which you're passionate about, and that's where you're going to get the best benefit and everybody involved. So
typically on the shows, we ask about the most unique and the most challenging project you've worked on, but being as I'm uneducated about biomimicry, I want to kind of go down that path a little bit more now that we really got to know each other. And give us one example, like you gave the fan example, which is really cool. Tell us some other things as you're going to school with biomimicry that's really light bulbs have went off that you want to tell the world about.
Well, I just find the whole biomimicry thinking process fascinating. So the idea of biomimicry, as we've discussed, has been around for a while, but it really didn't gel until Janine Benyus's book that came out in 1997 when she came up with the term biomimicry, because there was no category to put it under. And now that there was a title for it, people could, I don't think Google was even around then, maybe it was, but nowadays you can Google it and there so many things come up as biomimicry, and that really helped gel this innovative field. And what's fascinating to me is that it's a process. It's a way that can plug into the normal design process in an architecture firm or engineering firm. It's not something completely different. The only thing that's really different is that you're asking nature questions or asking what biology is happening. You're asking nature how it functions in order to fit the functions that we, you know, have in our human design problems. So for me, like, the biology aspect is great. I've always been a science nerd and just love that stuff. So the fact that I can now combine science and architecture is just great for me. So taking, you know, reading about different biological organisms that are coming around, there are 30 million species on this planet. So that's just so much information to learn from, and just learning about the cool ones that are out there. My current favorite organism is the Venus flower basket, which is this sponge that lives on the bottom of the ocean. And the sponge produces glass, and it doesn't break at the bottom of the ocean, which is amazing anyway. And the way that the sponge creates the glass is it's a horizontal member, a vertical, and a diagonal. And it just becomes so structurally sound that it's like nothing else that we've come up with. And Foster's and partner had come up with the Gherkin. I don't know what the actual name of the skyscraper is in London, but it's using that structural system based on the Venus flower basket. And it's this uber sustainable project. So it's just so cool. And then there's another example of the mantis shrimp that its eyes has the best eyesight of anything else on this planet. And it has 16 photoreceptors as opposed to humans' 4 photoreceptors. And it can see anything from visible light to infrared to ultraviolet. So what can we learn from that? And that's kind of the interesting thing about biomimicry. You can approach it of, I have a design problem. This is the function I'm trying to solve. Let me go out to nature and ask these questions. Or you just get to go outside and see how cool nature is. And that's why I feel like in Colorado, biomimicry is the perfect design lens, because we're all already going outside. The majority of humans spend 90% of their lives indoors, which just is really sad. And sometimes it's, you know, just too hot, too cold, just not nice enough. But luckily we live in Colorado and it's so beautiful here that everyone goes outside all the time. So it's not really an issue. And actually, one of the three essential elements of biomimicry is to reconnect, because it is having this connection with nature to learn that we're not separate from it. We're a part of nature. And that's really at the heart of what biomimicry is. And if we can work with nature as opposed to against it, we can accomplish a lot more.
Now, are there examples in history where this kind of came into play and they were doing biomimicry without really knowing they were, you know, practicing biomimicry? And what comes to mind is like the Romans and things like that. Were there design elements, or maybe even, you know, the Egyptians and stuff? Does any of that cross over into biomimicry at all?
Yes, definitely. So, before 1997, we didn't really know what to call it. So Leonardo da Vinci, really like stellar example of practicing biomimicry. And actually in, I guess it was 1941, there was the Swiss engineer, went for a hike, discovered that his dog was covered in burrs, looked at it under a microscope, and based on the structure, he developed Velcro. So Velcro is really the first product that is biomimicry.
Now, there you go. Now, think of that, how impactful that is. Something that truly came out of nature, looks completely like it came not from nature, and yet is used in everyday life for a million different functions.
Exactly.
Pretty
cool.
So Velcro.
Yes, Velcro.
That's my learning lesson of the day is wear Velcro. That's so cool. Like,
right, who knew?
Honestly, I was like, I'm not a science guy. You know, I'm a sales guy. Like, so science, like analyticals, I'm an expressive. So a lot of science architects,
yeah,
I don't relate very well. Like when you go back to say architects love architects, I love architects after a few beers because I'm a little too much for them sometimes. Because and that's where we found we do this Anderson flyback. At first, it's kind of like, Jesus, that crazy Devin is doing the intro and he's going crazy all over the place. But we connected happy hour, and it's and it's after a couple of days, and that's a whole nother podcast about selling different ways to different people. But man, you got me excited about Velcro, and now I want to learn more about biomimicry.
It's kind of a Oprah light bulb moment, really, because we started the whole conversation by saying we don't know the first thing about, you know, biomimicry, and yet we kind of did. We just didn't know we did, because we all know Velcro. Who doesn't know Velcro, right? And that all stemmed from that at the very beginning.
Now I'm fiending for more. Give me another Velcro story.
Okay, so another Velcro story. Let's see. So probably like the poster child in terms of architecture for biomimicry is the Eastgate Center, which is in Zimbabwe. And the design of the Eastgate Center, it's a 330,000 square foot office building that they wanted to figure out a more efficient way to cool it, since it is in the desert. So they looked to termite mounds and how they remain cool in the desert. Because fun fact, termites are actually farmers. They grow fungus in their mounds, and they have to keep the temperature in a certain range so this fungus can live. Really odd fact. But looking at how the termite mound is constructed, it's using thermal mass because of, you know, the dirt and the clay that it's built with, and then using the chimney effect, it's able to cool itself and keep it within this temperature range for this fungus. So Mick Pierce is the architect for the Eastgate Center, and using, you know, looking at how the termite mound works and then using other sustainable principles, he was able to take this office building, and they say they use 90% less energy than a typical office building, even though they're in the desert, and were able to save the owner $3.5 million on upfront construction costs for their HVAC system. So just by studying termites.
You know, that's an interesting outlook, too, when you're faced with a project and say, you know, I have a task to get from A to B as fast as I can. And in reality, sometimes it pays to step back, look at things like biomimicry and how can we find potentially a solution for a big bill. You know, saving a few million bucks is a big, you know, that's worth a little time, right?
I would think so. I mean, I would like to
I got
to
get one more. Velcro, termites, one more.
Right. Let's see, another good example. So studying the lotus flower and how it always remains clean is kind of how it's the lotus effect, and how does that actually work? So if you look at the lotus leaf under a microscope, it has these micro and nano bumps on it that are ultra hydrophobic. So they repel water. And based on what the structure of this lotus leaf is, this company Lotusen came up with a paint that can be used on the exterior, and it self-cleans. So when it rains, all the dirt goes off, because on the lotus leaf, because of this ultra-hydrophobic surface, when the water beads up, it just washes off all the dirt from the leaf. So that's why the leaves are always clean. So using that technology, they've come up with this paint that's antimicrobial, anti-algae, anti-mildew, and cleans itself with no harsh chemicals, just when it rains or if you just throw some water on it.
Well, and that ties in the whole. It is. It's my mind's about ready to explode.
Let's window a door, geeks. I'm now a biomimicry geek. I'm gonna go over. This is phenomenal. I'm gonna go back and read the book from 1997 and join the tribe.
Please do, and also check out asknature.org. It has like hundreds and hundreds of biological strategies, and it's a really great place to start your biomimicry discovery.
Well, and one of the other things I think that people hear more frequently is, you know, sustainability in general, and particularly when it comes into architecture and construction. The term is used a lot of the times, even though biomimicry, I would think most people would agree they don't know what the heck it is or haven't heard about it. The truth is, with sustainability, I think a lot of people don't want to admit that they don't really completely understand, and yet here there's a lot of common parallels too, because, you know, you're really using something that is sustainable, because that is part of nature, right? I mean, am I missing something there?
Right, exactly. I mean, nature is sustainable. And the irony is, of course, that humans need nature, but nature doesn't really need us. We're just one of lots and lots of species. So it would really help us if we kind of asked for help from other people, from these mentors, of how are they surviving and thriving on this planet. They just happen to be sustainable because that's just what they do. So we just need to learn from that.
And I think the other thing that's important to look at, too, is that this is not just all warm and fuzzy stuff. I mean, Velcro is making, the patent may have run out. I'm not sure what all that history is. But at that point, when that guy discovered that, he made millions and millions and millions of dollars by employing some of these technique. So, I mean, based on what you're saying and all these ideas, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made, a lot of money to be saved when you're implementing some of these things. So from that standpoint, it's a real business. It's not just all warm and fuzzy stuff, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, it's all about the triple bottom line. So it doesn't have to just be about the dollars, but it's, you know, about the economy and about people.
And to tie it all together, we've learned so much about different ways of doing things. So if you go back to like show 63, where we talk about straw bale housing and all the different ways we've learned on the art of construction, that people have different swim channels and focus on different things within that, it opens up, you know, so many, you know, light bulbs that are just so fascinating. So I challenge you, after listening to this show, go back and listen to some of those other ones about environmental design and certain non-standard methods, if you will, because, you know, I commend the people that are coming in like Cynthia that's talking about biomimicry, because when there's something that's new, it's harder, you know, because it's just not general practice. So, you know, you can go to the easy way to do things, or as I say, it's easy to do it yourself, but if you want to go far, build a tribe, you know? So that's what you have to do, is you got to take new engineering things like you've done. And the art of construction, to toot our horn, I think is a good platform for that, because you can come in and learn what makes you tick on biomimicry or straw bale housing or, you know, alternative building methods and all those kinds of things that we've had over the years.
Well, and the other amazing thing that we've learned, and you touched on at the beginning, is that there's a real interconnected group of people that are involved in this industry. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, Lindsay, she was the one that introduced us to Cynthia, and there's been many other folks that have been on the podcast as well that are connected in one way or another, and it is like their own tribe, if you will. So
you blew my mind. Velcro, lotus flowers, all back from Da Vinci.
Whale fins.
Whale fins.
Ceiling fans.
The show notes are going to be cool on this one. Go check out the show notes. And in closing, if there's one thing for our trade audience, contractors, architects, and project designers listening to this, one thing that you would say to grow your business that the world can hear, Cynthia, you're on that platform to end strong.
Well, I think kind of combining both the idea of biomimicry and the Denver Does Design is this idea of networking and collaboration, because you can't design, build, really even live in this world by yourself. Like, we are a social species. So the beautiful thing about biomimicry is it's not just the architect in a closed room. Like, it's working with engineers and biologists and the contractor and the owner. And it's this collaborative thing and creating these relationships. And that's a really exciting thing for me, is that I do love meeting new people, hence the Meet the Dark Side event. So hopefully I could make some connections at Meet the Dark Side and then, you know, grow this biomimicry team as well.
Awesome. How fun. Yeah. Thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you very much.
Termites, Velcro, lotus flowers.
Whale fins.
Whale fins.
It's pretty.
I'm blown away, man.
No, we're laughing, but it's really amazing when you think of the practical applications of, and where did Velcro come from? Was that a termite or was that wasn't a termite?
No, that was the dog burrs.
That's right. It was the dog burrs. And then the cooling of the building in Africa was from
the
termite
fungus
thing.
And the termites.
Unbelievable. So practical applications.
Hey, Kevin, maybe we got to get out of this studio and go out and smell the roses.
I think so. I ain't smelling no termites, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was pretty fascinating.
Well, I will always remember this moment when Luna jumps in my Labradoodle with her long hair and gets covered in whatever burrs and this and that.
Velcro.
So, you know, sometimes it's where the light bulb goes off because I'm laughing and joking about it, but it's serious stuff. Like when he talks about saving millions of dollars on a building because of termites, like take the blinders off sometimes.
Absolutely.
And we always talk about how you have to put the blinders on and off and begin with the end in mind and all these kind of stuff. But it was such a fun chat for me to just peel back the layers on a Friday afternoon and let's go have fun and smell the roses.
Well, and what a true leader in the industry when you think about it. I mean, here she comes into an idea on the Denver Does Design group thinking that wouldn't it be great to bring people in the industry to talk and interact together on a social basis, but talking about some technical and kind of business-related things, and she goes out and does it. Now the group is, after 5 years, as big as 400 people coming to an annual event.
Yeah, KTGY is lucky to have a gal
Absolutely.
Like Cynthia. She is doing all the right things, and she's going to go places. And what a great way to talk about sustainability is really what it boils down to. And we've had a lot of great shows in the past, but we went kind of squirrel holes instead of just kind of peeling back the layers in a kind of different point of view. It really, I got a lot out of it.
No, absolutely. And it is amazing because you think of all these acronyms and all these descriptions of things, and yet you don't really kind of understand, you know, what's behind it, and particularly something like biomimicry, which isn't as common. And now we know about all the details.
So, Tribe, hopefully today we've made you think a little bit differently when you're out and about and maybe hearing about termites or wondering about a mantis shrimp. Or the
lotus flower.
Lotus flower, or your dog is covered in burrs. Look at it a different way, because that's what I did. I mean, I was painting pictures as I was hearing the story a very different way. So when you're working on the art portion of construction, open up that art point of view and see about how you can shed water away from that flower on your building.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Cynthia.